Speaking of Ultron, right, what a goal. How good is he?
If you're David Mundy, you can do anything.
Brayshaw. Oh, he goose-stepped beautifully. And a couple. Herky-jerky, shake and bake. Magnificent.
Whoa, there I am. Hello. Welcome back to the Flag Mantle Podcast. I am your host, Stuart Sterling. Hopefully you're having a fantastic day today. We've got a whole heap in store for you during this show. We're going to be reviewing the game against the Cats, what went wrong in retro round for the Dockers. We're also going to be having a look at Liam Reedy. What's his backstory? Where's he from? He's playing his debut tomorrow morning against the GWS Giants over in Sydney. We're also going to be previewing that game, and we're going to be talking a little bit about the trade period. Shea Bolton, Liam Baker, and Jack Martin. So we've got plenty to get through here on the Flag Mantle Podcast. If you're listening to this on Spotify through the Flag Mantle links, thank you very much for your time. If you're listening over on Boom on the overnight shift and you are a Yank, hello, because you should be a Fremantle fan now, because we are on from 3 to 6 overnights on, I think it's Monday morning. It is. It's Monday morning. We're 3 to 6 a.m. On the overnights here at Boom Radio. So if you're a Yank and you're tuning into the Flag Mantle Podcast right now, hello and welcome. We are all about Australian rules football here. It's not rugby. It's not the NFL. It's nothing like that. It's something completely different. So, I might be taking a bit more of a holistic approach to our episodes going forward, as we do have a different type of listenership coming in from other countries, mostly the US, but other countries here on Boom Radio. So strap in, stay tuned, and get ready for the Flag Mantle Podcast. Yes, welcome back to the Flag Mantle Podcast. I have not gone anywhere. Thank you very much to Tim Minchin for supplying that audio as well. So let's get into this review against the Geelong Cats, shall we? We lost by 11 points in the end. 9 goals, 8, 63, 62, plays 10, 13, 73. A big loss against the Cats. And if you were a numbers man, if you're looking at the stats, it would appear that the Fremantle Dockers played the better game. And on paper, I think that's a fair assumption to make, because we had the majority, the bulk of the uncontested possessions. We beat them in disposals by 90, 397 to 307. We kicked and handballed the ball more. We went inside 50 just one extra time. So what are we doing with our disposal? That's the number one point I want to address here. What are we actually doing when we have the ball? This game was not the typical Fremantle spread, handball, overlap, run through the middle type of game. We went back to this chipping game that was very famous last year for being one of the worst styles of football to play. Geelong, they just they put us in a box. If you watch this game at the ground, you would know what I'm talking about. They defended the corridor with their life. They could not care less if we played through the wings. They just did not want us to play through the corridor. They absolutely slammed stoppages. Like, they pushed everyone at the stoppage. We could not flick it with hands to leave the stoppage area and get flow on play. And they also had an extra behind the ball. So if we did just hat kick it forward to get out of the stoppage to alleviate the pressure, they had an extra there as well. So I think they outcoached us. I think JL needs to do some thinking, go back to the whiteboard and draw up some new stuff, because Chris Scott, yeah, he definitely outcoached us, and there was not much we could really do about it. As soon as we started losing the midfield to a 34-year-old Patrick Dangerfield, that's when you know stuff is going to become wraps. That's how you know you're probably not doing your job as a football club. We generated 19 shots from 50 inside 50s. That is well below our average on percentage. That's 38%. Geelong, on the contrary, 22 shots from 49 inside 50s. That's 44%. They dominated us has in that statistic. Disposal efficiency, I think it's the worst stat in football because an effective disposal could literally just be a chip kick backwards that does nothing. We ran at 81%, so we did not turn the ball over very much. They ran at 68%. So that is something to consider. And I just wonder if we are being too safe when the pressure is on. Can we play finals football? Because finals football is high pressure, high intensity. You're not going to get a second to breathe, and I'm not sure a game plan is there just yet. I think we need another year, another off-season of developing that and a style of play, and making sure we have a best 22 of guys available that can play this game style, because we looked out of our depth against the Cats for the better part of that game, and you could tell that the talent was just lacking. We didn't have Tracy, we didn't have Darcy, we didn't have Pierce, we didn't have Walters, we didn't have Emmett, and I'm not using that to make an excuse. I'm using that to say that, hey, the pieces that we need to play a football game are not there. Our key forward, our key back, and our ruckman, that's our spine. They were all missing. We can handle a halfback flanker being out. We can handle a pressure forward being out, but we cannot handle Pierce, Darcy, and Tracy all at once. And unfortunately, we're going to have to do it again this weekend against the Giants, which we will talk a little bit about quite soon. But other stats from the game, we lost the stoppages, hitouts 27-48. Of course, that's not Luke Jackson's, that's not what he does. That's not his thing. Reece Stanley toyed with him in the ruck. He couldn't get any run going, Luke Jackson. He could not use his strengths this game. I just don't think we were open enough as the game progressed. We were quite, we sort of regressed to playing really, really safe football, and that's not what Luke Jackson's good at. Luke Jackson is a fantastic, he's one of the best players in the competition when we start going, when we get moving, and he's part of the, he's like an extra midfielder in there. Once the game opens up, Luke Jackson is a significantly better player, whilst once it sort of collapses a bit and the pressure comes on, that's when we need a big body, a Sean Darcy, a Liam Reedy. We need someone to knock it clear, knock it straight down to our mids, get first use of it, because we are a different team when we get first use. Clearance is 32-35. We're chasing their tail all afternoon. Dangerfield and Max Holmes. Max Holmes, man. Max Holmes. He's a speedy guy. I know he's been playing a very, very good brand of football this year, but I didn't quite expect what I saw on the weekend. He took about 5 or 6 bounces all up, and the amount of runs he had down that wing where he would just be the first guy at the stoppage to win the footy, and then he just went, and no one could keep up with him. Eddie couldn't go with him. Youngie couldn't go with him. Fifey couldn't go with him. He was just off to the races, and he was very, very damaging. You only get one disposal for that. He gets the ruck tap, and he off some runs, and he might kick it 50 metres after running for 60, and you've made 110 metres of gain there, and you've had the one disposal, so I think Max Holmes taught us a bit of a lesson. If we look at the splits on how we got our footy, a contested ball, we lost this by 12, 114-126. Uncontested footy, we won this by 101 possessions of uncontested ball. That's too much. That is not enough, like, not enough contested. We need more contested footy, less uncontested footy. Uncontested footy looks great when there's no pressure on and everyone's a traffic cone and you can just waltz around them. Geelong, that is not Geelong. Geelong are switched on. Geelong are a top four team. Geelong are experienced veterans. They're not going to allow that to happen. 63 intercepts to 67 for Geelong. So we did turn the ball over more than the Cats did, despite having more disposals at a higher efficiency. So that just tells you what we're doing with the footy. Mark 120-87, 11 marks inside 50-9, winning both of those stats. Once again, the marks doesn't really mean much, and marks inside 50, once again, doesn't mean much if you can't convert. 9 goals, 8 from 11 marks inside 50 is not great, versus the Cats, they had 23 shots on goal just from the 9 marks inside 50, so they were getting it to their smalls. Grant Myers, Brad Close, Tyson Stengel, that brigade really took a hold of us, and their midfielders got forward nice as well. Our biggest lead for the game was just 6 points in the third quarter, whilst Geelong, they held 23 points in the first. Yeah, they got out to a four-goal start, and that was it. That was pretty much game over from that point. We cannot come back from four-goal-to-nothing head starts, and JL alluded to that in his press game, his post-game press conference, saying that we just cannot keep up with four-goal head starts. We just can't do that. We have to come out firing. We can't wait until they land all the punches and go, oh yeah, I need to punch as well. Nah, that's just not what a football team should do. If they're looking to win, they should, you know, come out and kick some goals first. That normally helps. And then, of course, we were up at three-quarter time and we ended up losing that game. That's the fifth time that's happened to us this year. Next worst is two. So we are by far the worst at closing out three-quarter time leads in the competition. That's something that needs to be addressed ASAP, ASAP. I'd be surprised if they were not meticulously planning that at training, running drills, running scenario work, doing game stuff. And then you look at the tackle count, 36 to us, 58 to Geelong, 8 tackles inside forward 50 to us, 14 to the Cats. They were all over us. Yes, we had so much more uncontested footy, but that allowed them to get in our heels, put on some pressure, and cause some turnovers. So that's where the game was won and lost. 18 bounces for the Cats, 8 to us, 39 one percenters for the Cats, 34 to us. So all the important statistics, they all went to the Cats. We're going to talk a little bit about the players in the next segment here on the Flag Mantle Podcast. Yes, I'm back on the Flag Mantle Podcast, your host Stuart Sterling. I'm here to talk a little bit about the players who impressed me, what happened, what do all the stats mean? First of all, let's look at the number one ranked fantasy player on the ground, Luke Ryan. 36 disposals, 34 of them kicks, 15 marks and a tackle. Look, a lot of people will look at Luke Ryan's stats and look at the way he plays on game day and go, hey, that's empty disposals. You're not doing anything with the footy. And I understand that argument. He's not doing, like, a whole lot of damage, especially in the forward half. He's quite literally doing no damage in the forward half. However, Luke Ryan is our quarterback, and he is the guy that sets everything up. He's the guy at the back of the team that arranges everything. He is the master of the switch. He takes a long kickouts. He's a very composed player under pressure. Good intercept marker. Good one-on-one player against guys slightly bigger than him, slightly smaller than him, around his size. He's just, what he does with the football is he sets everything else up. Yes, Clark does more damage. Yes, Walker does more damage. Yes, Chapman and Wagner, they all do more damage with ball in hand, but it's Luke Ryan that gets it to them. So someone has to give the ball to the damaging player. And I explained Luke Ryan as a bit of a center back, as like, if we're doing soccer terms here, he's the center back. He's not going to create goal assists. He's not going to, you know, put people in very dangerous positions, but he's going to start. He's going to generate the play for the dangerous players. And I think that's really, really important. My only worry here is 36 disposals for Luke Ryan means we were swinging it back the back line way too much. So much. We were trapped down in our defensive half. And look, if we're just getting the ball down there, there's going to be turnovers regardless of what team you are. You could be the Sydney Swans, the Hawthorn Hawks, the Brisbane Lions at the moment, the Western Bulldogs. You could be any of these teams. You're going to have D50 turnovers, unfortunately. But what these teams are very, very good at is leaving D50 without turning the ball over. So they are quick to get the ball out of there, and we are less so. We need to trust our ball carriers a little bit more. I noticed we were long down the line a fair bit, and that favored the Cats, not having Sean Darcy there or Josh Tracy for a bailout mark down the line. Or Jackson just simply not making a contest of it. I just think the pieces were not in place for us to perform well. We were never going to win that game without Tracy, and we're never going to win that game with Darcy pulling out 10 minutes ago, no Liam Reedy in there. We're never going to win that game with Matt Tabiner playing. And so it's just, you understand what happened, but you're allowed to not like it at the same time. So Luke Ryan, 36 touches. He did have 951 meters gain, which tells you long down the line a lot. Three intercept possessions, probably not a lot. Four inside 50, so he is working up the ground a little bit, but it's nothing massive from him. The next one down the list who does have a bit more damage, Jordan Clark, pulled out the shooting celebration, which I thought was absolutely fantastic from him, from Jordy. Kicked an absolute stunner from 55, just absolutely launched it. Love when he kicks the ball inside 50, even better when it goes through the big sticks off his own boot. He had 28 disposals and a goal, 10 marks, 4 tackles. Another one of those guys that you're like, ooh, I don't know if he needs to be having high 20s for disposals. I think maybe mid to low 20s. Just get him damaging. I don't care, you know, how many little chip kicks around the back he gets, how many handball receives he gets to just go sideways with it or long up the line to a contest with no Tracy or Darcy. Like, that method is just not going to work with the personnel we have. But I think otherwise he played quite an important role. He played a pretty good game, actually, I'd say. He had just the three inside 50s, 486 meters gain, so he's not gaining nearly as much as Ryan, which, I mean, I suppose is really hard when you almost gain a kilometer in a game, but I thought he was important. He had 7 intercept possessions as well, so he's playing his role back there, but he just needs to become more damaging. He's one of these guys that just needs to start getting off the leash, start running, get that handball overlap going, because I didn't see a whole lot of it from Jordy Clark, but he's becoming like the sweeper at a lot of stoppages. Like, his man is coming up to stoppages and he is becoming like the pseudo sweeper in a lot of cases. So watch out for Jordan Clark becoming almost like an extra midfielder at times in the next couple of weeks and then leading into finals. Jeremy Sharp, 28 touches himself. I thought he played a fantastic game, actually. He's one of the standout performers from the weekend, in my opinion. Caleb Strong, 22 touches, 3 goals, just the 5 clearances from, or 6 clearances from him. Wasn't one of his better games as like a center bounce mid. He wasn't like overly busy at the stoppages. However, he did kick the 3 goals, which were very important. His last one was massive, was absolutely massive. So you've got to love your midfielders getting forward and kicking goals. But if you break down who kicked the goals on the weekend, we've got Sarong with 3, Jackson, who played ruck, with 1, Hayden Young with 1, Clark with 1, and then Amos Frederick Sturt with 1. So we only got 3 goals from nominated forwards in this game. You can argue, oh, Jackson's a forward. He played ruck this weekend. That goal came out the midfield. So Sarong with 3, Jackson makes 4, Young makes 5. Yeah, that maths. And Clark makes 6. So we kicked 6 out of our 9 goals from non-forward line players. That just shows you the importance of Josh Tracy down there to really make that forward line function. And the importance of our midfielders, like, kicking accurately to our forwards. So Sarong, good game, but probably not the guy we want to rely on to kick all of our goals. I thought Chapman and Wagner were both important. They had 22 and 23, respectively. Andy Brayshaw, a bit of a down game. Just the 20 disposals and 3. 3 tackles from him. Brandon Walker, 22 touches. I thought he was important off halfback. Could have used a bit more run from him. Matthew Johnson came back into the side to the tune of 21 disposals, 6 marks, 2 tackles. I thought he was important as well, Matthew Johnson, but I thought he probably could have used his tackle breaking ability just a little bit more. I know Geelong are mature bodies, they're harder to shake off, but I thought he could have taken the game on a little bit more. And Switter with 19 disposals as well. Luke Jackson, 13 disposals, 24 hitters. I think that's the story of the game. We just didn't take it on enough. I think they trapped us in our midfield and they couldn't like let us leave the center stoppage without like having a boatload of pressure on us. So I think Geelong really put the hammer on. I think we struggle against those kind of teams, which is worrying when we're going up against the GWS Giants because they like to do that as well, only they're more damaging when they get it moving forward. So a lot to think about going into the GWS game, which we are going to be reviewing after this break. Evil. Welcome back to the Flag Mantle Podcast. I'm still your host, Stuart Sterling. Have not gone anywhere. And I am here to talk a little bit about the Giants and the Dockers. And I know you've seen all these reviews all over your podcasting feed, all over your Instagram feed, all over all your feeds. So I wanted to take a bit of a different approach. And I was told by someone to have a bit of a look on Total Football. And I found this clip from Ted Lasso that I thought made a whole lot of sense and sort of personified how the GWS Giants play their footy.
At the 1974 World Cup, tiny country of the Netherlands came out of nowhere and made it all the way to the World Cup final, playing the home team, heavily favored Germany. Those Dutch hippies scored before the Germans even touched the ball.
Yeah, but Holland lost that game.
Correct. But along the way, they won the hearts of fans all around the world with a style of play, dare I say, a philosophy, called Total Football, which, coincidentally, Coach dreamed up in a barbecue sauce-related hallucination just last week.
No, it's true, but hey, it's not about me. Go on, keep shining.
The best player on that team and the godfather of Total Football was this guy. Can anyone tell me who this is?
It's Tim Robinson from I Think You Should Leave.
No, it is Dutch football legend Johan Cruyff.
It's pronounced Cruyff.
My apologies. With Total Football, Johan Cruyff,
that's it,
took his small club Ajax to three straight European titles. Now, he later became a coach, first at Ajax, and then he took Total Football to Barcelona, where he won the Spanish championship 4 years in a row. Now, the central cog of that team was an industrious but brilliant midfielder named Josep Guardiola, a.k.a. Pep.
Look at that head of hair. God had to take it away just to balance things out, yeah?
Pep became a coach as well, honing his own version of Total Football that he took to Barcelona and Bayern Munich, eventually landing at our great white whale, Manchester City. He briefly coached a very talented young player until that beautiful dum-dum quit to go do a reality show.
I was robbed!
Total Football is about constant movement. Players are no longer in set positions. Defenders are free to attack. Attackers are trusted to defend. It's about taking risks and supporting each other's choices.
Like when your friend wears something new and outside of his comfort zone, and instead of ignoring it, everybody pays him a compliment.
Mm-hmm. By the way, great hat, Ash.
It's pretty sweet.
Yeah, it frames his face nicely.
Exactly. Total Football is about letting go of your baggage and trusting your intuition. It's jazz. It's Motown. It's Mamet. It's Pinter. It's Einstein. It's Curie. It's Gaga. It's my mother proudly displaying her vibrator on the bedside table. It's about throwing off the constraints put upon you by society and by yourselves.
We all know football is life. But a beautiful life is Total Football.
Yes, Total Football. I was told to have a look at that and sort of read into it and see what it means, see how I can apply that to Australian rules football. And I think the point of that was to go, oh, I think this is how Fremantle play, when in actuality, I think it's how the Giants play. They've got a lot of guys that can play a range of positions and do a range of roles. They've got a lot of running power from their back half and a lot of midfielders who aren't afraid to come back and defend. And I think Total Football fits GWS a lot better than it does Fremantle, and even more Hawthorn. I think if there's an example of Total Football in the AFL at the moment, it is the Hawthorn Hawks. GWS, Hawthorn play similar sort of styles, so it'd be real interesting to see how we defend that. And so I went out of my way, I did some more research, and I found a bit of a clip from the San Antonio Spurs. Now, JL has been heavily influenced by the Spurs organization and Greg Popovich. I think more off the field and how you deal with player development and growth and high performance, I think that's the sort of sphere that they're really, really trying to rein in on. But I think you see a part of their Spurs offense in our midfield, in our center clearance, when we're flicking the ball around, looking for someone to break the line. Let's listen to this explanation from Coach Daniel on YouTube from the 2014 Spurs offense.
Moving on, and part of what made them so special was their ability to play without a set. Unlike most teams now, without a set, they wouldn't always resort to a simple pick and roll. They could create a good shot simply by moving it quickly. Here, for instance, they make a defense work with some dribble handoffs, and finally, an open lane presents itself. I mean, how many all-star shooting guards would be content with getting the handoff and then waiting for splitters to set the ball screen, which would be a good play? But by reversing it, Manu encourages further unselfishness, and in the end, he gets rewarded. They played with a great sense of urgency, always looking to make quick decisions, and what they were doing wasn't revolutionary, but just good basketball. Mills passes it, and instead of standing still, he simply screens away. And after having to work, the defense makes a mistake when Allen is late on the switch, and Kawhi makes him pay. With their urgency, they could sometimes create a good shot through sheer force alone. Here, for instance, watch how hard Bellinelli cuts and then fills to the corner, forcing Allen to close out. On the pass, Kawhi doesn't stand, but he cuts, freeing up space on the drive, and they get a good shot.
I think our Fremantle midfield is very similar to that in sort of the get the ball and then go and do something with it, but then go and make yourself useful as soon as you've gotten rid of it. Go lay a bump, go lay a block, go get into open space to get a receive, go do something with urgency, make the simple thing happen with urgency. Flick the ball around to find the open man and then use that path. Use the best path that you can, and sometimes that's a halfback flanker running up to meet the ball. Now, that's a little bit of a different Oppo analysis, so we're going to go into what's your typical stock standard opposition analysis. Let's see. GWS versus Fremantle. Let's run through some of the team statistics, shall we? GWS have won 5 games on the trot. Their percentage is 118.8 as opposed to our 115.2. We are 2 out of our last 5, by the way. Their average points for is 89.1 to our 86. Their average points against is 79.6 to our 74.6. So they're 3 points better on offense. We're 5 points better on defense. So that tells me it's going to be a close game. Average age, both 23. Average games played, they have 10 more. We're 2 centimeters taller across the board. Let's get into the stats that matter. Disposals, kicks, handballs are all even enough to call them square. Inside 50s are perfectly square. Disposal efficiency around the same. We are 3 points better when it comes to efficiency inside 50. We didn't see that last week, but over the course of the season, we do get 2 more shots from the same number of inside 50s. We win 2 more free kicks per game. We're a better stoppage team across the board. We're down on contested possessions, but we're up on uncontested possessions. We turn the ball over less because we are the safer team. And according to power rankings, the AFL power rankings, GWS have the best list in the competition. We are ranked 8th, which I think is probably around the mark. I think we're around 8th. GWS being the best list in the comp. I think the Bulldogs have a better list. I think the Swans might have a better list. I think the Lions have a better list. I think they've got the 4th best list in the competition. We mark the ball more because we're safer with the ball. We take less contested marks. That's all Jesse Hogan, essentially. That's all he does. And we tackle less. Tackle in forward 50 about the same. Everything else is pretty similar across the board. I think you really have to look at some of the finer details to get the best outcomes when you're looking at stats. Jesse Hogan, the ex-Docker, kicked 19 goals in 18 games as a Docker. Now off at the Giants is leading the Coleman Medal. Who gets the Jesse Hogan matchup? I think, hot take here, I think it's going to be Josh Draper. He led the game, or he came second in the game in intercept possessions last week with 11. Or I think he led, actually. He led the game with 11. And I think he is the best matchup for Jesse Hogan because it allows Brennan Cox to come over as the third man up in the contest and negate Jesse Hogan. They've got Aaron Cadman there who, if Aaron Cadman ends up kicking 5 because Cox is more worried about Hogan than he is his own man, then I think absolutely fine. I think that's the route you have to take if you want to win a game now and then. You have to put all your eggs into the Jesse Hogan basket because he's the most targeted player inside 50 this year, and his set shot kicking is fantastic. He's in the teens for behinds while he's in the 60s for goals, and he's one of the best contested marks in the league. I think Josh Draper is going to get a bit of a lesson when it comes to body work and leading patterns this game, and if we can negate Hogan, with a combination of Draper and Ryan slash Cox, I think we're doing a good job, and that goes a long way to winning this game. Another matchup I'd like to look at is the Toby Green matchup. We sent Heath Chapman to Jeremy Cameron last week, and that had a pretty good effect on the game. I think Heath Chapman took the chocolates there. I'm not sure who goes to Toby Green. Is it Brandon Walker? Is it Heath Chapman? Is it someone else? Is it Luke Ryan? I think Heath Chapman will probably be given the job once again. Who goes to Amos, Jackson, and Voss? I'm not entirely sure. I think Buckley probably goes to Amos. I think that's the only one I'm pretty sure about. That matchup makes a lot of sense to me, to my ears. But there's matchups across the board here. The midfield matchup is huge. Young, Sarong, Brayshaw versus Canelio, Kelly, and Green. I think that's going to be one to watch. Who gets Tom Green? Is it Nat Fyfe? Does he go back to tagging? We will find out. But stick around here on the Flag Mantle podcast as we talk about trades. In the next segment, I'll see you there. Yes, welcome back to the Flag Mantle podcast. I'm still your host, Stuart Sterling. Have not gone anywhere, will not go anywhere. I am here for the long haul. I'm here to talk about the trade period, and I've got a player under my microscope that I think is going to make an unexpected exit at season's end. His name is Bailey Banfield. Now, Fremantle have already offered Bailey Banfield a contract during the season. He has yet to sign, and it makes me nervous because I remember Lachie Schultz on and off the rookie list, given one-year deals, two-year deals, disrespected by the Fremantle Dockers, according to Will Schofield. He ended up leaving for his own personal reasons. However, I think the same could apply to Bailey Banfield. He's been on and off the rookie list for years. He's finally playing some good football. He's been playing good football for a couple of years now, but this year especially, he seems like he's finally found his groove in our forward seven. And, you just start to wonder, are we going to lose him too? We cannot afford to lose him and Michael Walters in the same time area, in the same couple of years. We just cannot afford to lose all these small forwards. And if Bailey Banfield doesn't sign a contract extension soon, I'm very, very worried he is off to another club. Would a North Melbourne, would a St Kilda, would a Collingwood, would, I don't know, any of those types of teams take him? I know he's dating Julia Edwards, who is a model and who is not, she's not staying in Perth like she used to. She's gone away for a lot of different work-related reasons, and it makes you wonder, is she possibly going to be a driving factor to Bailey Banfield leaving Perth? I'm not sure. I'm not sure how that contract negotiation looks. I'm not sure why Bailey Banfield hasn't signed the extension yet. Maybe it's not enough money. Maybe we're waiting for Andy Brayshaw to sign to give Bailey more money, or waiting for, a Shea Bolton or a Liam Baker to request a trade before we, sign a Bailey Banfield. Maybe he's lower down on the pecking order than we think. I hope that's not the case. He's been really, really productive this year, and he's been very versatile. He's played a number of different roles. So it'll be interesting to see how that one plays out. The other one is Andy Brayshaw, who I just briefly touched on. He's out of contract at the end of 2025, he's number one priority, isn't he? Fremantle came out the other week and said, yep, Brayshaw is our number one priority. So as soon as the season is done, I expect a signature from Andy Brayshaw. It is looking likely that he is going to re-sign. I was very worried about St Kilda for a while there. He is a pre-agent. They've got a boatload of cash, and they're about to have a couple of really high draft picks after Josh Battle leaves. They're going to have two top five picks, apparently. So, yeah, I was a little bit worried before the news broke that he was very likely going to be staying. So it's just him and Banfield at the moment that I'm a little bit worried about. Tabner, Corbett, these other out-of-contract guys, they're probably not going to be here in 2025. However, I did want to get on to the players who might be here in 2025. Those are Shea Bolton, Liam Baker, Jack Martin, and Isaac Cumming. Isaac Cumming, we're going to start with him. Fremantle and Melbourne have shown a little bit of interest, but there's way more interest coming from other teams in Victoria and namely South Australia. So it's probably going to be Port Adelaide, especially if they lose Dan Houston. They'll be getting a replacement halfback flanker, which is probably going to be Isaac Cumming. So nothing doing there for Fremantle. That brings us down to three. I want to talk about Liam Baker because he's got a decision to make. All reports suggest that he is coming west, and his decision is no longer do I want to stay at Richmond or do I want to go? It is do I want to go to Fremantle or do I want to go to West Coast? And I think he should... Look, I want more talent in the team. Having Liam Baker in the team is not a bad idea. I think he would be a fantastic fit. He can run through the midfield. He can play a bit of forward pocket, you know, be a little pesky forward crummer guy that puts on a bunch of pressure. Or he could be a rebounding halfback flanker. So or he could play in the wing. I mean, there's a numerous amount of positions that Liam Baker can play, and I think he just adds some extra versatility. Maybe he's a bit of a Banfield replacement. They kind of play the game a bit differently, but they offer similar versatility. So I think Liam Baker would be a good one to get, but I'm not as sold on him as I am on Shea Bolton. Shea Bolton has got to decide between Fremantle, Richmond, and West Coast. And all reports suggest Fremantle are currently leading the chase. He actually came to Fremantle and said, hey, I wanna check out what you guys have to offer. And Fremantle went, oh, okay, we'll take Shea Bolton. So expect that one to come through as soon as the Richmond season is complete or the Fremantle season is complete. I'm expecting Shea Bolton to request a trade as soon as that happens. And the one that I'm really intrigued to see how it plays out is Carlton's Jack Martin. He's been rumoured for a move to Fremantle with the Dockers. Very, very interested in his services. He would fit perfectly in our forward line, especially if Banfield were to go. I think he's a bit of an upgrade on Bailey Banfield. Should his body hold up in the long term? And you know, we've had a few injuries over these last few weeks, but I think overall we've been one of the fitter, healthiest teams in the competition, you know, putting aside the last month or so. But I think we can help Jack Martin figure out his body. I just hope it's not a bit of a Harley Bennell situation going on here where we go, oh yeah, we'll take you in, we'll fix you up and you'll play good footy, and it never really pans out that way. So I hope that doesn't happen. But look, we'll see. I think I'm intrigued the most by the Jack Martin one. Of course, Shea Bolton and Liam Baker are better players and Isaac Cumming's a better player, but I think in terms of fit, if pure fit and the amount of talent you're going to get on the field for the amount of expenditure you're going to have at the trade table, I think Jack Martin is probably the pick of the bunch. He is the most valuable bang for buck player of the three that are rumored to come. So I hope that one gets done, and I hope Shea Bolton gets done. And then our forward line is looking way more dangerous. Imagine a full season of Tracy, Amos, Jackson down there, with Switter being that half forward connector, pressure forward, defending the corridor type guy. And then you've got Shea Bolton, Jack Martin causing havoc. Who else do we have down there? Well, Bailey Banfield might not be there, but Tom Emmett putting on pressure, Michael Walters a play finisher, Sam Sturt a play finisher. I think our forward line looks really, really nice if we start to add all these pieces together, and it looks like we're having a tilt at 2025's premiership. I think that's within reason. And let's segue into something a little bit different now, because earlier in the piece I did say we are going to touch on Liam Reedy, who I have not gotten at this point in the show. So I thought this would be a good chance to discuss who Liam Reedy is, where he comes from, and what he brings to the table. He's a 24-year-old ruckman, is 204 centimeters. He is absolutely massive, and I'm guessing he's somewhere between 105-110 kilos, because unfortunately we cannot see the weights of the players anymore. AFL website. Not happy about that still, but whatever. He was drafted in the rookie draft in 2022 with pick 13. Recruited from Frankston and then Brighton, East Brighton, and Beaumaris. Bomaris. So he's a country boy from Victoria, which suits perfectly to our club. We love taking Vic country guys because they have no problem being homesick. So Vic Metro kids, yeah, just stop getting homesick all the time. Terror! sorry there. I got something stuck in my throat. But on Liam Reedy, let's have a look at his waffle numbers. Last week, he did have 54 hitouts against Mimstrom, which, I mean, Mimstrom, not a number one choice ruckman. However, a good player nonetheless. Peel Thunder currently first in the waffle for all of you who aren't keeping up with that as much as you probably should be. So all these people that are saying, hey, Will Brody, look at his numbers. Look at his numbers. He should play in once. It's actually because Liam Reedy is possibly the best tap ruckman in the waffle at the moment, and he's giving silver service to our midfielders, who Will Brody doesn't defend, is a slow-plodding midfielder, can't kick it either, can't make a good decision to save himself. Never mind. Excuse the Will Brody hate. My bad. I know I shouldn't be yucking someone else's yum. It's not my fault that I have hatred for... Well, it's not hatred. I just don't... I love Will Brody the person. From all reports, he's a very good person. I hate Will Brody the player. There. Enough said. Let's get into Liam Reedy's stats. I've been trying to pull them up on my phone for a very long time, but the Waffle website is absolutely atrocious. So I've switched to my phone. Players... P.O. Thunder, what number does he wears number 8 at P.O. So that's how you know he's a certified waffle player, is when you have a high number in the twos. He's played 13 matches. He averages just over about 10 touches a game. He's kicked one goal in the season. His handball kick split is about 50-50. 20 marks for the... So he's only taken about a mark a game, which isn't a whole lot for Liam Reedy. 60 tackles on the season, so he's averaging about 5 tackles a game. 578 hitouts. Jesus, 5-7... divided by 13, is he's averaging 44.5 hitouts a game. Oh my word! And he's also averaging about 4 inside 50s a game. So he's a dominant clearance center bounce tap ruckman. So he's a bit of a Sean Darcy about him. So we've got baby Sean Darcy in the team this week. So that's all you need to know about Liam Reedy. And that's enough of me on the Flagmantle podcast. Hopefully you had a grand old time this week, because I certainly did. I enjoyed my time on the show. I'm trying to press this button and it's just not coming. Here it comes. And we can't hear it. Can we play the outro, please? Here we go. Whoa, a bit loud. Here's the outro. Thank you very much for listening. This has been Stu from the Flagmantle podcast. Give me a good rating on Spotify, please. I really want that. Thank you very much. Listen again next week. Thanks. Bye. Thank you for listening to the Flagmantle podcast. If you have made it this far, please leave us a review on whatever streaming site you use to access the Flagmantle podcast. And don't forget, we've got social media too, over at the Flagmantle podcast on Instagram and X. So go follow us there, send us a cheeky DM, and you might get a response. We'll see. Thank you for listening once again, and I'll see you all next time.